Chapter 6, Shattered Rock. Almost immediately after writing the foregoing letter, as if a hammer had struck and shattered solid rock, I underwent a sudden cataclysmic change within myself. Call it an alteration of consciousness, a shift in my mental perspective of reality, a religious conversion, or a transcendental experience, it's far easier to label than to describe. My letters to follow illustrate this change. In the meantime, I'd like to stop for a moment to reflect upon and investigate the factors contributing to such a profound psychological and spiritual reaction, both from my personal point of view as a thinking, feeling human being, and from my professional stance as a psychiatrist. One of the most important motivations behind the writing of this book is my desire to communicate some of the uplifting nature of my experience and to share it with those who are yearning for light. Even though at present we know little about the various factors and mechanisms involved in a spiritual transformation, it is almost enough to be aware that such a phenomenon exists at all. Knowing that many people have undergone or been witness to this extraordinary experience can bring joy and the strength to continue into the lives of others who are searching. What factors can lead a person to adopt a radically different view of reality? Why is it that one person can change almost completely upon seeing Sai Baba, while for another it takes a certain amount of time to measure and study him, and still another, no matter how much contact he has with Baba, experiencing the most incredible demonstrations of his greatness, changes not one iota? I have tried to analyze this, but have given up. The answer is simply beyond me. I remember reading something Baba said about this when he was questioned about why some people stay at the ashram, disciplining themselves, becoming involved in meditation and good services, and appearing to be very devoted, yet still not experiencing much of a change inside, while others will stay only a short while and suddenly be overwhelmed with bliss and joy and become completely transformed. He has used the analogy of a rock that has a specific breaking point. Let's say 22 blows with a hammer. It might already have received 20 blows in a previous lifetime, so that in this one, it needs only two more to shatter, while a similar rock may have had only 2 blows, and so requires 20 in this lifetime. Such concepts involving another dimension of reality are beyond my level of consciousness, and so I am simply unfamiliar with many of the factors operating here. I now realize my limited capacity to communicate my experience in a way which allows others to share in the transformation. But I can shed some light on these reactions by tracing the steps along my journey. And I can assure the reader that there is possible a profound inner reaction in which an amazing new vision of the world opens up, and one feels that he is coming home again. This magnificent transition took place within me. When I returned from India after the first trip, I was higher than a kite for my experience and thought that everyone would be interested in and excited by what I had witnessed. It was incomprehensible to me that instead, most people seemed to shrug their shoulders and go on their way. Was I leaving out of my narrative some essential element? Or were they simply not seeing something? Soon after my return, my wife and I held open house for some 250 friends and colleagues. I had asked a number of reputable people, perhaps to protect myself, to join me in relating their experiences with Baba and in describing their impressions of his stature. We also showed beautiful films demonstrating Baba's powers and his magnificent way with people. I was amazed to find how few people were really interested. On the other hand, I found that I had lost much of my credibility among my medical colleagues, to the extent that some of my psychiatric students were contacted to determine just how crazy I had become and whether or not I was still capable of teaching. Having lived it so intensely, I had forgotten how incredible and upsetting my story was bound to be for those who had little or nothing with which to compare it in their own experience. I had forgotten my own reaction upon hearing Indra Devi for the first time speak of her experience with Sai Baba. I had forgotten all that I had gone through in India before I could accept what my eyes and heart were telling me. And if I found it difficult to believe my own eyes, then why should you find it easy to believe that what I say I saw did in fact happen as I will report it? What are my qualifications in evaluating psychic and psychological phenomena? Let me fill in a little of my medical and scientific background and trace some of the steps leading to my spiritual transformation. I was born into a medical family, my father being a rather prominent gastroenterologist in Detroit. He told me years later that soon after my birth, he lifted me to his face, his mouth to my ear, and whispered, "My son, you will be a doctor." I remember frequent visits with him to the hospital, where I was introduced to his bedside manner and the relationship between doctor and patient. At a very early age, I was his sidekick in sometimes embarrassing, often exciting moments as we wandered through the hospital peering into people's lives. I entered medical school at the University of Michigan in 1958. My initial goal was to be able to help people in crises, and I felt I would either like to work in an emergency room where activity, excitement, and drama were at an intense pace, or else be a surgeon, dramatically saving people's lives. But in 2 years of medical training, I discovered that surgery and medicine were practiced in a way which I felt reflected some of the shortcomings of our culture. That is, there was a high degree of specialization at the expense of concern for the total man. Somehow, priorities seemed to get mixed up in all the fascination with sub-specialties and gadgetry. I felt there was something too mechanical and too super-scientific about the approach. I remember one experience that epitomized the situation for me. It took place during a neurological lecture in which one of the professors brought a patient into the lecture hall before some 150 students to demonstrate certain limitations in his facial movement. This man was confused and unable to speak, obviously quite disabled by his physical impairment. Looking at the class without making any personal human contact with the patient, the professor asked us to observe an impairment in facial movement while he inflicted pain on the patient. Then he dug his knuckles deep into the man's chest, pinching the skin and applying great pressure on the bone. The result was a tremendous grimace, but on only one side of the man's face, the other side being paralyzed. The situation was hyper-scientific and without a trace of human warmth. To me, more had been demonstrated here than a condition of paralysis. My interest in more abstract questions about the nature of existence and in making deeper contact with my patients led me toward psychiatry. The residency program in which I participated had a very strong psychoanalytic orientation because many of the supervisors were from the Detroit Psychoanalytic Institute. I became interested in this approach and was anticipating my own analysis when my plans were interrupted by 2 years of military service. My medical experience in the military was primarily in hospital psychiatry in Fort Sam Houston, San Antonio. There I was in charge of two, sometimes three, psychiatric wards. All told, I have treated thousands of people in psychotherapy and have gone through individual and group therapy myself. I am board certified, having passed this highest test for competency in the field of psychiatry in 1969. I have training and experience in many psychiatric techniques, including psychoanalytically oriented therapy, gestalt therapy, bioenergetic therapy, behavioral modification and conditioning therapies, relaxation techniques, group and family therapy, and marriage counseling, as well as experience in community psychiatry, drug therapies, and liaison psychiatry in a general hospital. In 1968, my family and I moved to San Diego, where I now maintain a private practice. With the title of assistant clinical professor, I teach hospital-applied psychiatry and supervise psychiatric residents at the University of California. I'm also the psychiatric consultant to the university's hemodialysis and kidney transplantation program. My interest in the phenomenon of other levels of consciousness dates back to medical school years, even when I was struck by the fact that although some people were intensely curious along these lines, most were not, and I couldn't understand why. I remember in particular reading William James's Varieties of Religious Experience while in medical school and being deeply moved. I was surprised that the responses of many of my friends frequently did not parallel mine, and was curious about this difference in reaction. My fascination with the possibility of a spiritual transformation and of seeing more deeply into the nature of reality continued even after I entered psychiatric training. For the most part, I was bored reading the usual psychiatric texts and found myself instead attracted to spiritual and mystical writings. I wondered why there wasn't more psychiatric interest and investigation in these areas, since they seemed such appropriate subjects for a psychiatrist interested as he is in psychological change in general and how it comes about in therapy. The reaction connected with a religious conversion appeared to be different in quality from the change occurring in psychotherapy. How were they related? And what did spirituality have to do with psychiatry?